Caskey hits this one deep to left field. This has a chance. This ball is gone. It's a walk-off home run.
Now Caleb driving left side. Alley-oop to Nelson. Throws it down with two hands.
Raiders make the handoff. Keeps it running left. He's across midfield. 40, 30, 20, 10. Jalen Reiner to the house.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast. The A-State Podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, football wrapping up the regular season. Signing day and bowl season on the horizon now for football. Meanwhile, men's hoops spent the holiday weekend in the Bahamas. We'll recap that. But first, want to welcome in the Sun Belt Conference Coach of the Year from A-State Volleyball. It's Brian Gerwig. How you doing, Coach?
Hey, we're doing well. I've barely had a chance to enjoy that title. We've been working nonstop and really preparing for a deep postseason run in the NIBC tournament.
All right, so you were here right before the season started when Sarah Martinez, the libero of the year in the Sun Belt Conference now, was in on this podcast. And I remember you and Sarah sitting right here in this room and telling us that you felt really, really good about this team. Practices were going great. Did you know this was a team that could win 26 games and win the Sun Belt? Is that what you felt at that time?
Yeah, no idea. I mean, we were thinking maybe a 19 or a 20 win team. And after that, there's a lot of luck that plays into that. There were some 5-set matches that we pulled out that kind of fell in our favor, and there's some we lost. But as I kind of told the team down the stretch, like this year, the past year, even next year as we start to look to 2025, like we could have a better group of athletes, a better group of talent, but there's no guarantee that we'll be in the exact same situation. And we just kept imploring them to take advantage of the situation where we were. And the fact that after we split with Texas State, we controlled our destiny. And if we won out, we won conference. But that's a rare place to be. And it's rare to have the team that buys into that and is willing to fight for it and kind of knows what's at stake. And it doesn't intimidate them. They don't back down from that challenge. And I mean, there were many matches that could have gone the other way, and was really proud of them, again, to have a really tough South Al crew come in here and to win back-to-back games, and then all the emotion of senior night, and that didn't really rattle us, and it really wasn't until we got to that conference final, and the day before, there was many players that we just kind of all looked at each other, and people were like, we've never been here. We don't know what this is like, and I kind of looked at him and was like, man, it's been over a decade. It's been since Western Kentucky that the last time I was in that situation of playing for a conference title, having that opportunity. And yeah, I feel like I could have probably done a little better job getting them mentally prepared going in and excited. And it wasn't that they weren't ready to play that match. It's kind of what happens when you get punched. And man, Texas State came out in those first 5 points and just mashed us. And we just never could quite get back on track. And we tried really, really hard. And that one single game does not any way, shape, or form define our whole season. It was an unfortunate loss late in the game, and I really thought we were on the way to getting in the NCAA tournament, and that just wasn't how the kind of cards came out. So we're really thankful for this season. This group was amazing. They really bought into the vision, bought into the work ethic that kind of surrounds that. And I mean, it was really from a coaching perspective, a great group, a whole lot of fun, very little drama, no issues. Just really enjoyed this group.
You're a confident guy, and I knew you were confident in the talent of the group you'd put together. But even if you don't remember comments like this, and maybe you shouldn't, it was funny during the course of the season, you'd say, well, if we don't win again, we've beat last year's win total. If we don't win again, we're over 500 in the conference. When did this thing shift from, you know, off to a good start or having a nice little run to thinking, hey, this can be something different than that?
You're digging into my mentality. I'm never counting a win before it happens. I'm never discounting an opponent. I'm never overlooking people. And my staff will tell you, I can tell you the 9 or 10 different ways that every single opponent could beat us. And I'm fearful of that loss. I'm fearful of that team figuring out either our weaknesses or using their strengths, whether they know them or not, and using them against us. And my fear is always, have I prepared my team defensively? Are we ready offensively to execute at a high enough or most consistent level to make the other team's job as difficult as possible. So I don't think my mentality ever flipped. Like, I never felt like, I mean, I got texts and calls along the way of, oh my gosh, like, this is amazing. And I'm like, well, we won the last one and we got one other one this week that I want to win. And it was the same prep week after week. And I don't think that even to this moment, like, I don't think that I've sat back and, cause we're not done. So my mind hasn't flipped to, man, this was an amazing season. And I'm sure when we get in the recruiting process and trying to build towards next year, maybe those talks will happen. But at the moment, I still got another opponent I want to beat, and this team is still motivated to keep going.
That's what I kind of wanted to lead into, because at this point, you're not thinking big picture. Because if you were thinking big picture at this point, you'd think, well, I had to come in and rebuild this thing. And we had really, really young players back in year one. You won 9 games in year one. 16 in year two, and here you are sitting at 26 in year three and a chance to win a few more. So when you look at it, big picture wise, there's got to be a little bit of pride there as far as how quickly you built this thing up, or did you expect it to be this soon?
Man, I expected to maybe be at 20 this year, and like 19 or 20 was kind of the goal, and that's, I thought we would end up third in our side of conference, and I think a healthy Troy, and they might have had another win or two in there. And I really think South Al, they had some trouble down the stretch. But, yeah, not to get to 26. And I go a little farther than that of the talks with Terry Mahajer years ago about trying to be this head coach and taking this program. And, you know, they obviously went in a different direction. And then with Tom Bowen, of who actually hired me, and that was part of my sales pitch to him, is I think I can do this in 3 years. And turning it around and actually being able to do it in 3 years is, it's been a ton of work, and a lot of thanks to all the assistants that I've had over the past couple of years. And they've each played a very specific role, whether it's recruiting or culture building or organization. And I mean, their ability to deal with me for over a year is also quite impressive. So they've all bought into the vision, and everybody that has helped me along the way has been really crucially important to just getting us to where we are. And again, we're a group of sophomores, 9 sophomores on my roster. I think as we grow towards next year of them being juniors, we had a very upset group once we lost to Texas State. And I have been playing that game over and over and over in practice. And I think they're sick of watching it. I put it right next to their water bottles. It's on a 65-inch TV. And every day they got to watch it. And I just want them, as I told them, like, don't let that little bit of turkey take the sting off of that loss that we just had. So we've been back at it in practice, and they were very disheartened to not get an at-large bid in the NCAA tournament. Like, had them all over at my house the other night. That energy in the room, like, during reading names, and we all had the RPI out, so we're going through and, like, listing teams, and they were just crushed because they knew exactly how close we were. And I think that will fuel them for the next year or two, especially with such a young crew, that most of these teams are junior senior heavy, and we aren't, and we are very much sophomore led, and sophomores are doing a ton of work, and I think they're learning and growing through the process.
Because the numbers may say third, but really, when you told me off the air here sort of where things fell, you really can make the case you guys were the second team out.
Yeah,
of the
absolutely.
NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I mean, they, having Georgia Southern be right above us, they're 47, we're 48 or 46 and 7, whatever it is, and to have Wright State between us, and they jumped us and took Illinois, which is fine. That's a big program, and a lot of respect for the head coach there. I think they've done some amazing things over the past, I guess, 7 or 8 years. And that consistency, and that's what we're looking to build. And as my team knows, that it's not the good wins. We went 3-3 in the top 50 teams, obviously losing to Texas State twice and then Western Kentucky, but beating Ole Miss, who is like 38, beating Georgia Southern, who is, again, right above us, and then beating Texas State once at their place. We've proven that we are relevant, and we deserve to be in that conversation, but we can't drop those matches to Southern Miss or to Lehigh that is in the preseason, regardless of the situation, or playing back-to-back during the day or whatever it happens to be. There's no excuse. If we are better than a team, then we need to focus and make sure that we can get that W.
That's a steep kind of price to pay. It's a hard pill to swallow, but as you mentioned, you can keep this bunch together. Like, now they're going to listen to you when you sit down and say, hey, you see the schedule, but before you ever start, you don't know which match could keep you out of the NCAA tournament.
That's absolutely correct. And we built this schedule. I spent weeks crafting this schedule, and it fell flat. There were teams that were predicted to be very high in conference play that were supposed to be one or two. And we were supposed to go in there and like play a top 75 to top 80 schedule, strength of schedule. And gosh, it ended up falling all the way out to like 200. We had so many teams that ended up getting injured that, you know, were not very good through the course of the year. And somebody like SEMO that goes on to win their conference and did amazing things. But like St. Louis fell flat. You have Ole Miss that did really well. Obviously, Western Kentucky won conference. But there's just some other RPI teams in there that hurt us from a growth standpoint that looking in from the preseason. And we did what we're supposed to do. If your schedule falls flat, you go 10-2. That's just what you have to do, and that's what we did. But then all that RPI help, that if we would have played more teams that ended up in the top 75, that RPI help would help us win or lose, and then our RPI would have kind of crawled up there into a spot where we could have gotten into the NCAA tournament.
But even beyond that, like kind of the teaching point is that you've been able to tell your team, it's not the Texas State match that kept us out of the NCAA tournament.
Yep,
it's sure. Dropping some random match on one of the first weekends or letting the conference, when you've got this thing to the point you want it, where it's not just, hey, we got to win this tournament.
Yep.
Then the margin for error is very, very thin.
Absolutely. There's a lot of pressure that comes with that of you've got to play perfect all year long. Learning that consistency will be the jump from sophomores to juniors. Are they able to offensively? I think our offense has been up and down all year long. It's not that we don't have the talent or the setters or really the scheme set up. We just are dealing with some, I don't know, maturity, growth, learning. And that's what they call it the sophomore slump for a reason. We have really avoided it for the majority of the year. And again, every once in a while, one kid would have a good game or a bad game. And that was kind of the story of our year. And I'm hoping that next year, with all of this growth and experience of this sophomore class has played full time since they were freshmen. Like they have 2 full years of experience. And hopefully next year they will start kind of to turn the corner in a leadership and a maturity and just a pure execution to understand the value of every ball and how we can't take for granted an open net swing or an overpass or, you know, an easy serve, like things that you kind of see those young errors. And it might be 1 point here, 1 point there, but at the end of the day, I'm fighting for 3 to 5 points as a coach, and the rest of it is pretty much going to wash itself out between the teams. So it's a very tight margin for error, and we're fighting for it. And hopefully these kids, again, 1 year a little bit older, 1 year a little bit more experience, and hopefully it'll be a different story next year this time.
There's well over 300 Division I teams. Less than a third of them get to go to the postseason, though. Look, I know you wanted to be in the NCAA tournament, but there's less than 100 teams that get to keep playing at this point. You're going to the NIVC, and you'll begin play coming up on Thursday, 3 o'clock, against UT Rio Grande Valley. And I know you guys are going in there ready to win a few more games.
Oh, absolutely. The team is very motivated, very focused. I think that they understand where we were at in that last match against Texas State. And they, even watching them get announced, my team was like beyond thrilled that they get to watch one of our teams go to the NCAA tournament. But they were, if I could say jealous, they weren't quite angry, but they really wanted that to be them. And going into the NIVC tournament is an awesome opportunity for more growth, to play other teams that have been successful throughout their season, other teams that are in a very similar spot to where we are, that they, most of them are going to be younger teams. They're building towards a conference championship. They're trying to grow as a unit in a postseason. And there's only one way to learn how to play in December, and that's not by sitting home on the couch and watching other people play. So we're real excited, and we've got 2 really tough teams, I think, this opening weekend out of the 3. And we'll be very interested to see what a competitive Rio Grande Valley team looks like. They're foreign. They play a little bit goofy compared to how Americans play. They are very motivated. They're an emotional team. They're skilled. They bring some different skills to the table. And again, just seeing how a team like that in the Southland Conference matches up with us as a Sun Belt Conference team.
Last year, you took this bunch. You played in this, and it was because, hey, we got all these young kids, and mm-hmm. to get them a taste of what playing in the postseason's like this is different. I mean, even though this team's still young, now a year down the road, this is not a team just trying to get a little taste of what this tournament's like. They're going to want to try to win this thing.
I mean, we also drew the winner match 1. So playing Wichita State, and a lot of respect for Chris Lamb over there. He's brilliant when it comes to the sport and strategy and research and all of that. And I still, I mean, I don't know if he remembers it. We got done with the match. We held him down to 10.5 kills a set. And he grabbed me at the end of the match. Like, we couldn't even say congrats to the teams because he was like, what did you do? That was the lowest kills per set we'd had all year long. Like, how did you do that to us? And I think maybe now, a year later, looking back, yeah, of saying we're number 6 to 10, somewhere in that neighborhood, defense in the country. And like, we've always been extremely talented. We've always had a very competitive group. Sometimes it's just that execution and confidence. So it will be a growth point of going from competing in this tournament as we did last year and just being a part to now being the part and the focus, and hoping that everybody else, you know, that maybe we meet Georgia Southern in the finals and maybe we are able to go play another Sun Belt team because we both have proven how strong we are and how good this conference is.
Brad and I brought this up last week. You had 3 all-conference selections. Sarah Martinez, first team All-League and Libero of the Year. You had Deidreana Kale, who was first team All-League, Sun Belt Newcomer of the Year, and Defensive Player of the Year. You said before the season she's going to be special.
Yeah, she is.
And then Caitlin Whitlock, second team All-Conference. And we did point out, probably no coincidence, that all three of those guests on the Second to None podcast.
Yeah, you do
year.
A great job. So if you'd like to select more people that would get more awards, I would really appreciate that.
We'll get you our ring sizes when we finish up here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
But you had some great young ladies on this team, and we see why this is working. I mean, those are 3 great representatives for you. And again, we know you're not thinking big picture at this point, but congratulations on an amazing season. 26 wins, Sun Belt Conference Coach of the Year. And this thing is just getting started.
Yeah, we're just getting started. I mean, once you get this ball rolling, it's much easier now to get access to bigger recruits. I mean, our fan base, man, we had almost 1,500 people at those last 2 matches. So we're just starting to grow and really stretch our legs. And I hope that the fans are appreciating the quality of ball that we're pulling in. And I hope that as the kids continue to grow and get better, hopefully some more of those awards keep coming our way. So I'm appreciative of the Coach of the Year, but that goes to the whole roster, 1 through 18. And they're amazing kids. They bought into what we're doing. And I really think that without them, I'm not here today talking to you guys. You know, we'd have a mediocre season, go 500, and we'd be like, yay, whatever, let's rinse and repeat. But the athletes have really made this season so much more fun and enjoyable to coach. And we're just excited as we keep building. And I think our 25 class is as talented as we've ever had. They're all signed already, so I can already talk about some of them, but they're physical. They fill a lot of holes in the roster that we even currently do have. Even being a conference-winning team, there's a couple spots that I think we need to get a little stronger. And obviously with the departure of Sarah and Grace, we need a couple more players to hit the floor. So excited to hit the transfer portal, which opens in about 6 days.
Let me ask you this, and we'll get you out of here. You said on this podcast before that the last time this job came open, you know, you wanted it. It didn't happen. And then as you spun that thing 3 years forward, you knew it was best for you that it didn't happen. Now, obviously, it's happened at the right time. You've done this in year 3, but what'd you learn about Brian Gerwig, the coach here in this year, from going to 6 to 26 in 2 years or whatever it is? What'd you learn about yourself over the course of this season?
Man, I mean, the players you recruit are the lifeblood of your program. Every player, every person probably has a cap from an athletic standpoint. And as we started to get this roster and really took it over and looking, there was no physical limitations, but getting kids from, you know, end of March, middle of March to May to buy into a system, learn a system, was really fast. And Macy Putt, give her all the credit in the world, it was just a huge role for her to take on, even though she'd been a huge player. But from the build from year 1 to now, I mean, I've spent a lot of time like reflecting on myself, of how I talk to the players, how I'm treating my staff, the organization, how we're able to communicate and communicate clearly the standards we set in our gym and what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. We've adjusted everything from how we practice. If I would have given you a practice plan day 1 or even a month or 2 in to now, they're completely different. How we train, what our focus is continuing to adjust. I think my brain right now is heavily defensive focused, and that's where the old saying of defense wins you championships. And I think that proved itself true this year.
Yeah.
And the thing that I'm now noticing is the most elite teams in the country have offense and defensive balance. And I knew that ahead of time. And I've let a lot of the offensive side of the ball go to my assistants and let them play through that. And I think between this year and next year, my personal growth is going to be more on the offensive side of the ball and to be as creative and as efficient as we are on offense to match that with our defensive prowess. So we're extremely good on defense. I will hold my hat there and say I will always be good on defense. I like my team to hold a team down and make it really tough on them. But I think you might see a new adjustment, a new version of this squad next year as we kind of turn and pivot a little bit to make us a better version of ourselves. But yeah, I don't think that any of the athletic directors, anybody made a bad decision. I don't think I was ready for the head coaching job when I didn't get it the first time. And it's now year three and looking back and I'm much more prepared to be a head coach. Obviously you learn every year and keep growing, and hats off to Terry. He's building something awesome down there at UCF. So it's a cool program. And I'm just excited what we've done here at Arkansas State and excited to keep this train moving forward.
That's Brian Gerwig joining us here on the Second to None podcast. We've got more to come right after this.
This is Coach Butch Jones, and we need you to help our A-State athletic programs by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that is making a real difference in the lives of our student-athletes. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access that you will not find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact, spelled ImpactClub.com. Your support is greatly appreciated and is helping our programs right now. Wolves up.
And we welcome you back into the Second to None podcast presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. It was the regular season finale for the football team on Saturday, falling to Old Dominion by the score of 40-32. First home loss of the season for the Red Wolves, and just didn't start off very well. Two turnovers on the first two possessions turned into two touchdowns for Old Dominion. Before you knew it, we're down 14-0 and just playing catch up the rest of the ball game.
That's really it. I mean, honestly, we could stop talking about that game right there and you'd have it summarized. Turned it over your first two possessions, got down 14-0, and yeah, just spent the rest of the time trying to get back and would get them just about reeled in and they'd get another score. But yeah, those two turnovers certainly were key, especially the second one. You know, you felt like you were going in to tie it at 7, and then before you know it, just a couple seconds later, you're not tied at 7, you're down 14-0.
Corey Rucker got the record. We've been creeping up on it for a while now, but able to, with his first catch of the day, break J.D. McKissick's record for career receiving yards. Was happy for him. He had a big day. 8 catches, 115 yards, and a touchdown. And that touchdown came late in the first quarter on a 4th and 8. And we knew Old Dominion was going to do this on 3rd and even 4th down. They just bring the house.
Yeah.
And that left one-on-one coverage out on the edge. And Jalen did a great job just throwing it up to Corey, and he made the catch. And actually had another touchdown on 4th and long later in the ball game to Courtney Jackson. That was on 4th and 9, a 35-yard score. But yeah, I thought the offense moved the ball well. It was a case of not being able to slow down Old Dominion. They scored touchdowns on their first 3 possessions of the second half. We were down 21 at one point, but just kept on fighting, got it back to within 8 points with 6 minutes to go. And I don't know how you were feeling at the time, but I'm thinking internally, we're going to find a way to still win this football
yeah,
game.
Yeah, me too.
Just the way our guys have played so well in those one-score games and, you know, had entered the day 6-0 in one-score games, just felt like if the offense got the ball back, they could go down and find a way to tie it up, force overtime, and you win it there. But we never got the ball back. Old Dominion was able to run out the final 6 minutes of the clock.
Did to us what we've done to a couple of opponents this year. Just taking the rest of the clock and said, you're not getting the ball back. You know, Southern Miss was one of those long drives where you just don't give them the ball. And you were kind of on the other side of that and on the other side of a one-score game. And I know Old Dominion was thrilled. They were on the other side of a one-score game. I'll credit Old Dominion because I know on this end, you know, there was some chatter amongst fans and the media about how much want to is Old Dominion going to have. They can't get to a bowl. They got to take a trip halfway across the country to play a game that's not going to mean anything to them and this, that, and the other. Not just the way they played. I would tell you, look at how long they stayed on the field taking pictures.
That was their bowl game.
It was the end of their season. And that's why, like, I finished up everything I needed to finish in my booth and went down to the field and did the stuff I needed to do there and then was headed back to my office. And there were still, I mean, there's all kinds of Old Dominion guys out there taking group photos. And, you know, it didn't bother me a bit in the world because they're in the off season as soon as that horn sounded. And so I'll credit their coaching staff and their players to a game they could have mailed in. They absolutely did not do that.
No, they played really, really well. And they rushed for over 400 yards in that game, and it certainly was not good missing an all-conference defensive tackle. Nate Marty wasn't able to play in that game, but that's not the reason the Red Wolves lost. Old Dominion played well and deserved to come out with the win, but at the same time, a winning season for the Red Wolves. They finish the regular season 7-5 and still a chance to pick up win number 8 in the bowl game.
Yep, and next, so there have not been all that many 8-win seasons in the history of the program. I mean, not that many at all. I mean, maybe, I don't know, the numbers 14, 15, maybe total, counting postseason. And some of those were, you took a bowl win to get there, or it took the 1AA playoffs and win a couple of games to get there. So it still should not be lost on any of us. Not a lot of teams win 8 games. This team's got a chance to go to a bowl and do that.
All right, so it was also senior day. 31 seniors honored before the game. And you and I sat here last week at this time and talked about the challenge that was kind of in front of you, trying to figure out a way to honor 31 seniors on the field before the game. So kind of take us through what you guys decided on.
Well, a lot of the credit to the layout of that actually went on the football side of things. They'll kind of come with the plan, hey, this is what we'd like to try to do, or how we'd like to try to do it. We'll just help them pull that off. And that was the case here, the way they did it, where they Coach Jones kind of greet the guys first and get a photo, and then they moved up to, you know, the 30-yard line or so, where they were given a rose, you know, for their mom or whoever's with them. And then the families lined up on the other side of the 50. They met at midfield and were able to get a photo. And we actually got about 2 minutes ahead of schedule.
Yeah.
Getting that in. And I don't think the guys, hopefully they didn't feel shortchanged by how quickly we had to go on that. But it's just, I mean, it's just the facts of the matter when you're trying to, I mean, the last two senior days combined had 25 guys. And this one had 31.
You had to do something different.
Yeah, it had to be different. And hopefully they got their moment there. And then, the one thing that was interesting, and I don't know if people noticed or not, but 30 of those guys were done in alphabetical order. But the 31st was Adam Jones. And that's not because it's logistics. It's not because they're trying to get the biggest pop for their kid or save him for last. It's that the first guy he met at the 10-yard line also had to go with him to be in the family photo.
Yeah.
So it made all the sense in the world to have Adam go last.
I knew it was a big challenge, but I was watching kind of all that unfold as I was going through my pregame and doing starting lineups on the air. But I thought, well, that was a good idea, having Adam go last, and seemed like it worked out.
Hopefully,
really well.
We did get a couple minutes ahead of schedule, so hopefully it didn't mess you up getting to a break with the anthem coming.
Well, I'm always paying attention to that.
Right.
You stay on time more with the anthem than pretty much any place we go, so I'm used to having to adjust on the fly.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea: customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same: you first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Red Wolves fans, this is Coach Destiny Rogers, and I'm asking you to help our student athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that highlights our commitment to teamwork while raising awareness and support for our local community programs. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team letters, special gear, and exclusive access that you won't find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at impactclub.com. That's Impact spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T club.com. Your support makes a real difference in the lives of our student athletes and in the future of our sports program. Wolves up.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and by Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com.
Now, wait, one thing right before the break, we talked about that anthem thing. I was kind of kidding, but you say that, and I'm not sure why people don't stay on schedule because everything's, I mean, scripted out pretty much to the second.
Yeah.
But I will say that if that's true, and I appreciate you saying that if that's true, I'm probably more mindful than anybody else in my position about trying to stay on schedule with the anthem and knowing that radio needs to get a break.
That's right. Yeah. I'm usually timing out just how fast I'm reading the starting lineups based on what time they're supposed to play the national anthem. So that's kind of stuff you and I think about. Nobody else is thinking about that stuff. Men's basketball did play three games over the weekend. They had their big trip to the Bahamas. So I tweeted out something about, you know, good luck to A-State men's basketball. And, you know, you can listen to Cade Carlton here. And there's this account on Twitter where I put A-State men's basketball playing from the Bahamas. And I spelled the lowercase. I did capitalize Bahamas.
Right.
But I guess there's an account dedicated just to those people who do not capitalize the T in the.
Well, now that's interesting because while we're sitting here, and this is the first time hearing of this, I'm going to go back and look.
It was like an automatic response.
Because I sent out a tweet from the athletics account, too, kind of promoting the five-game mini plan. But I know it said before they tip off in the Bahamas. So now I got to go. I'm going to go back to that tweet and see whether I capitalized it.
Yeah.
And I did not.
Well.
And didn't hear about it. So we got away with one.
You did. Well, I sure heard about it. And I mean, there's an account saying, and I think the title of it is, it's the capital T Bahamas. Their purpose is to correct everybody who gets it wrong.
You can't. I mean, we got one by them. So we're 1-1 there.
Well, started off the weekend well. Back on Friday, they defeated a good Indiana State team, 86-81. Darian Ford with the team high 18 points in that game. So able to beat an Indiana State team that won 32 games a season ago, is one of the better three-point shooting teams in the entire country, but the three-point shooting wasn't working for the Red Wolves on Saturday and a loss to Rice. Lost that game 75-67. The Red Wolves finished 3 of 26 from 3 in that game. And knowing just the kind of shooters this team has, hopefully that's the only time they're going to shoot like that from long distance the rest of the season. And then on Sunday, they fell to another good team, Hofstra, 68-66. They were down 14. The Red Wolves down 14 in the second half. Able to come back and tie it at 66 with 21 seconds to go, but Hofstra able to win it on a buzzer beater.
So you know how we just sort of, and on occasion, one of the things we enjoy doing here is kind of going behind the scenes a little bit, like we just did with the anthem. And I think they're, even if it's a couple, there may be a couple of people who find that stuff interesting. So here's another one of those after the Hofstra game. Because I'm listening to the game, I listened to the post game, and as soon as the post game ended, my wife is having to hear my explanation of what we just heard. You and I have both been there and done that on a day where our job, when we're calling that game, doing the radio broadcast for the team, and the post game rolls around, we're going to any length we need to go to accentuate the positives.
Yeah.
And there are days that the coaches just ain't having it. They're not interested in the positives. And so Coach Hodson and Cade Carlton kind of danced that dance after the Hofstra game, where Cade was doing what he would do. And neither guy was wrong. Like, right, most people listening had really no clue it's what they were listening to. But in the end, I was like, that's what I've done those before. Where, I mean, coach is not in the mood to hear about the positives. And a case in point is that, you know, the first thing Cade brings up, as any of us would, is that, hey, you came from 14 down with 8 minutes to go because we're going to leave with the, it's going to be positive. Well, instead, the coach is going, how the hell did we get 14 down with 8 minutes to go? That's where he's at. So, and so it was interesting to kind of hear that back and forth happen there in their post game, because there are just days where coaches aren't really
they don't want to hear
about the positives.
Yeah.
And we've all been there.
Yes, we have. And that's just part of it. And you don't want to sugarcoat anything. You certainly want to be honest about what happened. But
and that's so, actually, he actually used that phrase, Coach Hodson did at one point. I'm not going to sugarcoat things. And he said, we slept walk through three quarters of that game.
Yeah, and you can't do that against a really good team. Yeah. Now, probably the biggest bright spot of this past weekend was the fact that Isaiah Nelson did play his first three games of the season. The all-conference big man was not able to go the first five games of the season, but Isaiah steadily worked his way back. He played in three games, all of them off the bench, 9 minutes Friday, 12 minutes Saturday, then played 22 minutes on Sunday. So they're easing him back in, and hopefully with the two games this week, he's able to play a lot more.
I know we all sit around, we know the pieces, and we knew the core that was back, we knew the pieces he added, and we all get sort of salivate about what the finished product could be. Probably all get guilty of thinking that finished product was going to be there in the month of November, and that's not the reality of the situation. This team will continue to evolve, just like this latest evolutions adding Isaiah to the mix. But now he's got to play back. That's going to affect rotations, and that's going to affect, you know, his endurance and playing back and all the things. So, like, it's not a finished product. Nobody is, but this team's not. Even with all the people they had coming back, and even with all the talented people, it's not a finished product. They will continue to evolve and get better.
The men now 5-3 on the season. They got a couple of games this week. They'll host Jackson State coming up Thursday at 7, and then big game across the river coming up Sunday afternoon at 3 as the Red Wolves take on Memphis. The women, they haven't played in over a week. It's been a while since Destiny Rogers and her crew were on the floor, but they're going to be back in action if you're listening on Tuesday tonight as they play at Little Rock. This is the year we're going to get that first ever win at the Stevens Center.
Yeah, their schedule's kind of wonky here early. I mean, one home game in November, some big gaps. They've already been a time where they've gone, I think, 5 days between games, and then I think 9 this time. So it's been a kind of an unusual schedule for this bunch, and I'm sure they're itching to get back out there to Little Rock and hopefully ride another road win to a rare home game. We get to see this team in person for just the second time come Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday at 2. They're going to be hosting Jackson State. So got a chance to see the women in person for just the second time this season. They'll be on the home floor coming up this weekend. Indoor track and field, they'll have their first event of the year coming up this weekend. They'll be participating in the Boo Rogers combined events at the Crimson and Gold Invitational. That's Friday and Saturday in Pittsburgh, Kansas.
Big track town, Pittsburgh, Kansas is.
This is an event they go to pretty much every year.
You know, great indoor facility up at Pitt State. So, yeah, it really is a big track town to go to the home of the Gorillas.
And we'll kind of finish up back with football because got National Signing Day coming up on Wednesday, the earliest signing day ever. And look, Coach Jones had zero time to sulk after that loss on Saturday because he had 22 on-campus visitors at that game. They went straight to dinner at the embassy. They had a breakfast the next morning. You know, we filmed the TV show at 9 o'clock Sunday morning, and he went straight to breakfast from there, and then he had visits all day long. So it's been nonstop. Yeah. It's amazing, and I know he's scratching his head, and so are coaches all over the country about why in the world is signing day this early now. But, yeah, they're hoping to add a little over 20 of the newest Red Wolves coming up on Wednesday. And then right after that, on Monday of next week, the portal opens. So it's a crazy time. And, we got a bowl game announcement coming up at some point this week, too.
Just think about, in Lafayette and in Huntington and every other town across the country where they're getting ready for a conference championship game this week. And in the midst of that, you got to sign a class.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I have a hard time believing that could not be avoided.
It's pretty wild what these teams are having to do. And yeah, Coach Jones, he's got a lot going on this week. But as you mentioned, Michael Desimo at Lafayette and Charles Huff at Marshall have a game to get ready for on top of that.
And there are going to be teams that find out. And heck, I mean, potentially we could be one of them that could find out in the middle of the week, you got a game next Saturday.
Yeah.
You could find out on signing day, hey, you got a game next Saturday somewhere in a bowl game.
A lot of options. The Red Wolves, one of eight Sun Belt teams to go bowling this year. Again, they were one of 12 last year, which that was a record for any conference. But still, a good number of Sun Belt teams will be represented.
How about this? 82 spots, 82 bowl-eligible teams in the country.
Everybody's happy.
New Mexico State was in the late game Saturday night playing Hawaii, I believe, and could have gotten to six and got beat. And that left the number perfect, 82.
It's funny, Coach Jones and I were actually standing on the sidelines together at the Valley View game on Friday night, and we were going through the schedule of all the games the next day and looking at all the teams that were sitting at five wins going into Saturday, saying it could get really interesting just how many teams that might get left out.
Right, and then it worked itself out
it
on
did.
The number,
so.
Which is very, very rare.
It is. I will tell you, it was really neat before the game. Saturday, we're up in the booth, and look, usually there's a lot going on. We're getting ready to go on the air 2 hours before kick with our pregame coverage, and I told Darian Griswold, I said, well, let's go down to the Red Wolf Walk and just show the support for the guys, and I thought a good crowd kind of came in right before it happened, and we're sitting there talking with Governor BB. He's always at the end of the line, and you're standing there, and we're visiting, and had our man Jack Mullen, who's in charge of all these recruits. He comes walking up with them, and I called Jack over, and I said, hey, Jack, you got Darian Griswold right here. So why don't you have him talk to the recruits? And Grizz, of course, being Grizz, he walks right over, and you saw him. He talked to him for a good 3 or 4 minutes, and I asked him what he said afterwards, and he said, you know, I just told him the truth. You know, what a great place this is. He said, I never got to play for Butch Jones, but he's exactly the kind of coach I would have liked to have played for. And what a great tool that is to see somebody that had such an amazing A-State career, still very much involved, played in the NFL for a couple of years, but that kind of thing makes an impact.
Yeah. Everybody's got, hey, well, let's stop over and talk to this guy who was a quarterback, a basketball player, and an NFL tight end.
I'll take him as my salesman any day.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's great. Yeah, I'm glad he's on our team, both in the pitch and in the booth, too. So, yeah, tap into all your resources.
All right, appreciate our man Brian Gerwig coming in. Congratulations again to him and his team. And they got that big match coming up Thursday at 3 against UT Rio Grande Valley in the first round of the NIVC.
Yeah, I'd love to see him, honestly, hopefully just going around and might as well win the whole thing. And I think, I do think that'd be their mindset because, I mean, this is still a young team. This is not playing in that event's not for everybody. If you're old and you were an NCAA tournament or bus type team, it ain't for you because you'll go and probably lose early. But this is not the situation that team's in. They're young and hungry, and I expect them to come out and play the way we saw them play over the season.
Young, scrappy, and hungry.
Yep, they're not throwing away their shot.
They didn't this year. 26 wins in a conference championship. Thanks to Caleb Garner for setting up that interview as well. For Brad, I'm Matt. Have a great week, everybody.